Hello and welcome to Animal Voices. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Everyone's taking a breather, getting some air. I'm Lauren Corman here with Rob Moore doing the program with you today, and then we have Stephen here as well, who is our guest for today, trying to learn more about community radio, and he was with Confessions of a Meat Eater before we got on the air. It was quite hilarious. So yeah, we've had a couple vegans and a meat eater in the studio today, and yeah, Stephen's a really nice guy, and we've been working away at him. Yeah. And we have Lamia checking today. She's also going to be giving us a bit of an intro to the show that she'll be doing in the upcoming weeks over the break as well. And Rob will be doing some shows. I think you'll be doing at least one.
Sure.
By yourself. And we'll be playing one of the pre-recorded shows from last year, which is the Holiday Veggie Show, which was it was a pretty hilarious show, just about how would you survive the holidays if you're a vegetarian or vegan. It can sometimes be a bit of a trick negotiating family dynamics, and you know, when there's butter in the mashed potatoes and your grandma made them, and you know, how do you get around all that stuff? So it should be a good few weeks.
Do you remember who the guests were on that show?
No. We had a whole bunch of people on. Like, it was one of those.
It was
one of those shows that was like five or six people where we, you know, have like these little 5-minute clips.
So that'll be next week. How to survive the holidays as a vegan.
Yeah, and then are you going to be doing news? You think for that as well?
Yeah, I might. Yeah.
Rob, so dedicated. Today's program, we're going to be talking with Christy Stoic, and she's going to tell us about the Humane Charity Seal of Approval. And it's a program that's sponsored by a bunch of different animal advocacy groups, mostly in the United States, but it's administered through PCRM, which is the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. But the Humane Charity Seal of Approval is a campaign that is specifically supposed to aid people who want to give to various different charities but don't know exactly where their money is going, and they want to be assured that the research that they're supporting through their financial backing is not going to any animal experimentation whatsoever and any animal use. And so PCRM, through the Humane Charity Seal of Approval, has compiled this really huge list of charities, research institutes that don't test on animals and don't use animals. And they also have to go through sort of a rigorous process that these institutions have to prove that they won't test on animals in the future as well. So we're going to find out more about that. We're going to find out what some of the alternatives to animal testing are within the research field and whether or not they're applicable and realistic and practical and all that stuff. And we're going to find out where some places to give are. If you've been trying to figure out what to do with some of your holiday spending, if you have any extra, some people have decided not to give gifts, or in addition to regular sort of material gifts, want to give money away to various different institutions. This is the show for you. It's pretty surprising, actually, the number of research facilities that still test on animals. And it's like factory farming and a lot of different animal industries, and that all the stuff happens behind closed doors, and what the public gets to see and what actually happens in reality is quite different. So I think it'll be a great show. Before we jump into that, though, we're going to hear some news from Rob Moore.
Thanks, Lauren. In this week's news, and actually maybe I'll just make a short comment about that too, just in terms of the animal experimentation. Perhaps we should have gotten Michael Allen Fox's view on this last week. If you didn't hear that show, we had him on right before he moved to Australia to retire, and he was famous for first being a proponent of animal experimentation and then coming out as an opponent. And it's just really interesting what Lauren said about supporting these charities who also fund animal experimentation, and knowing that really they're not one iota closer to knowing how a drug will affect humans from the start of animal experimentation to human trials. So that is something to definitely keep in mind. In this week's news, we can start counting the deaths at the hands of West Edmonton Mall yet again, and cow's milk, again, does not prevent bone fractures. First up are a couple stories that relate to today's topic. From PETA.org, screen Prince of Darkness Christopher Lee took time to record a new PETA radio spot in which he tells listeners, when you donate money to the American Heart Association, you help fund cruel, pointless experiments on animals. Please don't support any charity that kills. And what has the American Heart Association done with donors' funds? Despite the fact that major advances in studying heart disease have come from human data, The American Heart Association has injected particles of glass into dogs' hearts to induce heart failure, given dogs a mini heart attack every 2 minutes for 8 hours a day for 3 weeks, shocked dogs' hearts for 30 minutes straight in order to cause blood clots, given newborn pigs brain injuries by using pendulums to strike metal shafts inserted into their skulls, and implanted electrodes into two-week-old lambs' hearts and heads, then kept them in cages so small they couldn't turn around or move forward or backward. Aren't you glad you came in today, Steve?
Loving it.
If the AHA is dead set on using dogs, a virtual dog heart available from Physiome Sciences can precisely simulate the electrical activities of the individual cells and show how they are affected by chemicals and arrhythmia. Simulations like these help researchers test drugs without harming animals and can mimic exactly some of the experiments done by the American Heart Association. Next, from thisislocallondon.co, animal rights protesters have been blasted as insensitive and tasteless for holding a candlelit vigil for mice and rats, which have suffered and died during cancer research. Campaigners gathered outside the Cancer Research UK charity shop last Friday as part of the 7th International Animal Rights Day, coordinated by the animal rights organization Uncaged. They say their aim is to promote debate about the treatment of animals and to achieve international recognition for the rights of animals to be protected from cruelty and killing. But critics warned the vigil would not go down well with cancer sufferers or those who have lost someone to the disease. Joyce Pritchard, coordinator of Bromley-based radiotherapy action group Exposure, which campaigns on behalf of women who have suffered permanent injuries as a result of radiotherapy treatment for breast cancer, said, "Perhaps they should hold a vigil for all the people who die because there's not enough research into cures for cancer. I put humans before animals. I've had cancer myself, and I lost my brother to it last year. It's tasteless and insensitive to people who have got cancer and their families." But Jan Yarker of the Passive Pressure Animal Welfare Group, who was at the vigil, said, "Being for animal rights means public debate and passionate, intelligent opposition to cruel practices such as those funded by Cancer Research UK. It's not a question of putting animals before humans. It's simply about respecting life." She pointed out research on animals, including dogs, cats, and primates, for more than 30 years had not brought a cure for the disease. She said non-animal research is being done, and there are cancer charities which only use this type of non-animal research. This is the ethical and scientifically valid way forward. Stay tuned later in the show and we'll talk more about that. Next, from the CBC, one of four sea lions imported by West Edmonton Mall to fill its aquarium died en route from Scotland before it could make a single splash. The lion died after being moved by truck to London, where it was to board a plane bound for Edmonton, Mall spokeswoman Kimberly Evans said. All the marine mammals received a clean bill of health from a veterinarian before traveling, and sea lions normally travel well, she said. It may never be known what caused the death of the fourth sea lion because an autopsy did not reveal any abnormalities. "It's extremely sad for us that this happened. We went through a lot of work and checks and whatnot just to make sure that they were ready and getting the best care possible," Evans said. "I'm so sorry that she went to all that work for nothing." The mall has no plans to replace the dead sea lion. The animal rights group Voice for Animals, who we had on a few weeks ago to talk about this very topic, says the sea lion's death is a bad sign. "This should be a harbinger for West Edmonton Mall. We went from death to death with the dolphins at West Ed, and they're starting out with the same sort of thing," Tova Rees said. This next is a conference report. Highlights of the American Society for Bone and Mineral Research 26th Annual Meeting, Advances in the Treatment of Osteoporosis. And I thought this was an interesting little highlight. Canis and colleagues reported the results of a meta-analysis of milk intake, cow's milk intake to be exact, in 39,000. I have to be specific on that, right?
That's good.
Joan Dunayer would want me to say cow's milk, right?
No, she would.
Cow's lactations.
Secretions.
Secretions, sorry. 39,000 with pus, with blood,
yes.
And pus.
Mm-hmm.
39,563 women and men from 6 prospective cohort studies providing 152,000 patient years of information. No association was observed between milk intake and spine or non-spine fractures. It was an impressive sample, but not a randomized trial, and the systemic confounding could be obscuring a benefit. Nevertheless, this is not a good result for the believers in milk. Cow's milk, that is. Finally, from ABC News Online out of Australia, an international animal rights group says it has persuaded two major clothing retailers in London and New York to join a boycott of Australian wool from producers who use the procedure known as mulesing. We had Matt Rice on from PETA last week to talk about this. People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals has released a statement saying that New York-based retailer J. Crew and London retailer New Look have reviewed video footage from PETA showing what the group describes as the cruel treatment of lambs and sheep at the hands of the Australian wool industry. PETA says, as a result, both companies have given assurances they do not knowingly purchase wool from Australian producers who PETA believes treat sheep cruelly. This comes 2 months after international firm Abercrombie & Fitch became the first company to join the Australian wool boycott. Industry body Australian Wool Innovation is seeking an injunction against PETA's call for a boycott, which is due to be heard in the federal court in February. It is not yet clear whether PETA's latest move will prompt any further action from the industry. And that's it for this week's news.
Thanks so much, Rob.
You're welcome.
We're going to go to a workshop after this show.
Yeah.
This is all about interviewing, and I wonder if we'll come back, you know, in the following weeks and just be, I don't know.
Like super slick?
Pros. Because you sound pretty good, I think.
I don't need the workshop.
Well, no.
Should I give the workshop?
Maybe.
Also,
maybe.
Avril, she's not needed.
Yes, Avril Benoit from the CBC is coming and is treating all of the programmers to a workshop. So it's going
really
to be good.
We're really excited about that. Thanks to CIUT for organizing that.
Yay. I wanted to make sure that we give Lamia some airtime to talk about the program that she's going to host. So I'll be listening in Manitoba, which will be really fun. So Lamia, tell us what you wanted to do.
Well, listeners, it's your opportunity to tell us what you want to hear on the show for 2005. Also, maybe to tell us just ideas, nice things, good things, things that you can do in your year of 2005 to give back to this planet that we live on and take care of all the beings that scatter across the top of the surface. But, so, all that nice prose means, on December 28th, I am going to be doing the show all by myself.
I thought you were going to bring a friend in.
Maybe I'm going to try and bring a friend in.
Okay.
I thought you were talking about Michael Franti. And maybe you guys know I love Michael Franti. Lauren thinks I should try and interview him on the show. I think so, too. He is a vegetarian.
Yeah.
He's very cool. We're going to try and make that happen. But, where you guys all come in, listeners, on December 28th, for about half an hour, I'll be taking calls. I'll give you the phone number on that day, but please, please, please tune in so that we have a fabulous phone-in show, and you get a chance to tell us what you want to hear for next year.
This program, Animal Voices, I think has been going for something about for about 10 years. I don't know if they did call-ins before, but since I've been involved, which is, I don't know how many years, 3-4 years, it's the first time that we've ever done a call-in show.
Yeah, it's technically, it's challenging, but it'll be fun, too.
When I did a feminist radio program at the University of Manitoba, we used to do call-in shows a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 95% of the people who called in were men.
As a women.
And it would just be like women talking to other women about, you know, like menstruation or whatever, you know. And there'd be a guy would call in and say, well, I really like to help my girlfriend when she's having cramps. I kind of massage her here. Or people just, men calling in saying, how do I be a better partner? It was really an interesting phenomenon.
Right on.
So maybe we'll get a lot of people who eat meat that call in and they'll say, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Anybody.
And anything. Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, don't be offensive when they're on the radio, but
like, oh, wait, bad reception. We'll have to let you go.
Yeah.
Oh, whoops. So anyway, that's exciting that you're going to do the program. And Rob has, he has a few ideas of what you're going to be up to, right?
Yeah. So I think the next week also you won't be here, so I'll get something together.
Okay.
Don't worry, listeners. We'll take care of you while Lauren's away.
Yeah, I'll be listening it, you know, in Manitoba and rural Manitoba, being like, "What the heck?"
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we're gonna go to some music. We're gonna come back and hear from Christy Stoic, and she's gonna tell us all about the Humane Charity Seal of Approval, which is a great campaign that's administered through PCRM, also known as Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. They're a really amazing group. Check them out at www.pcrm.org, and you can also check us out at www.animalvoices.ca. That's our website, and there's archive programs on there, and we're going to have I guess we just got the John Robbins interview up online, so, and then in the next few days hopefully there'll be the Burnout Show, which a lot of people were requesting,
and the Michael Fox interview as well.
And the Michael Fox interview. And the,
you guys,
yeah,
sorry to interrupt, I just met someone on the weekend who said there's another animal rights radio show in Ontario at a university that I can't remember.
In Windsor. Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah. So yeah, well, we've got archives though. I don't know if
Sorry.
They do. No.
Yeah.
They're good. We should
segue.
Do some... I'm going to stop rambling. We're going to hear some music from Lamia, and we're going to come back with PCRM's Christy Stoic. She's going to tell us about the Humane Charity Seal of Approval for people who want to know whether or not the money that they've been giving away is supporting animal testing, and and what the alternatives are, and who are some good places to give to this season. Christy, thanks so much for being on the line today.
Thanks for having me.
So maybe we can just start off by, I gave a bit of an introduction, but you can probably give more of an in-depth introduction to what the Humane Charity Seal of Approval is all about, how it got started, and how long it's been going for, and some of the people that are involved to make this happen.
Sure, definitely. As you might remember, the Leaping Bunny, which was kind of a cruelty-free consumer product seal, was developed to make it easier to buy cruelty-free products. So PCRM formed the Council on Humane Giving, and that's a coalition of animal protection and physician groups. There are 10 other groups, 8 in North America and 1 in England and 1 in Australia now. And we administer a similar seal, the Humane Charity Seal of Approval, for health charities. And what we were finding and why we came up with this is people were unaware of the animal experiments they were supporting. When they wanted to donate to the fight against diabetes or cancer, for example, some were even leaving bequests in their will to, say, PCRM and the American Heart Association at the same time, which is an organization that has funded experiments using dogs, pigs, rabbits, and mice in the past. In fact, so we did a survey in 2001, found that 56% of those surveyed would be more likely to donate to a health charity with a non-animal research funding policy. So we developed the Humane Seal. It's basically a circular seal with a bunny in the middle that says Humane Charity. And it's since its inception in 2001, I believe, we've awarded over 220 charities the seal. In fact, we just awarded it to 2 more in the past 2 weeks.
Which are those?
They're both American, actually. They are Save a Child's Heart Foundation. And what they do is donate surgical time to cardiac surgery to children in developing nations. And also the Recovery Path Foundation, which donates access to treatment services for those with co-occurring eating disorders and substance addiction. But we do have, I think last count was 19 Canadian charities that have been awarded the seal. So
I want to hear what some of those are, but I wanted to hear a little bit more about what it takes to get the Humane Charity Seal of Approval. What counts as humane, and what kind of process do they have to go through? Do these research institutes, do these foundations have to go through to get the Seal of Approval?
Well, to get approved, the charity has to sign a statement of assurance, or some charities have provided another written assurance that the organization does not and will not in the future fund research involving animals in the traditional sense. So nothing, when you think of a laboratory rat or even a dog or cat in a research laboratory, is allowed. There are a couple of exceptions. We do permit studies with cell lines that have already been obtained and so won't result in any future animal suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Research that involves animals that have already been stricken ill and the research will then result in some benefit for the animal. And sort of, you can think of it like a clinical trial for someone's companion animal.
Mm-hmm.
Or an ethology study that would observe but not disturb the animal in its natural habitat.
What was the first word that you just said?
Oh, an ethology.
Ethology study.
Yes.
Can you describe what that is?
It's just the studying of animal behavior.
Okay.
Like Jane Goodall.
Maybe I've heard it ethology and I've been saying it wrong all these years. Okay, so ethology. Okay, great. So, do you approach these foundations, these institutions? How does the relationship happen to get this seal of approval?
Sometimes that is the way it comes about. Either some of my colleagues at other organizations have been helpful in, you know, pointing out health charities that might fit the bill, or our members will sometimes bring a charity to our attention, or if we find a charity, then we will contact them and tell them about the seal and ask that they sign the statement of assurance if, in fact, it applies.
Mm-hmm.
We also have charities that just contact us. They see us on the website, or they see an ad or something like that, or someone. In fact, we've got a great mechanism for our members who lots of people get these solicitations in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't have the Humane Seal, we ask people to put this little sticker that we give them that say, I'm only going to give to you if you have the Humane Seal. And then they contact us and say, well, how do we get this Humane Seal? And what's it all about? So
mm-hmm.
That's been really helpful, too.
And has anyone been on the list and then has been taken off the list, that they've gone back on their word, or you found out something otherwise, or has generally been, I hate to use the word compliance, it sounds really bizarre, but how has the compliance been?
We have never had that happen, actually. We had one charity ask to be taken off the list. It was a little, you know, they have this weird idea in their head that they didn't want to be associated with the list. So, you know, that's...
Because you're full of animal rights extremists.
Right, I guess.
Ah, yes, okay.
So, you know, we try to convince them otherwise. It's really, what we tell charities is this is a service to donors. People who are looking for a humane charity want to give to a charity that they know doesn't fund any animal experiments. This
mm-hmm.
is really for them. But it's also for the charities as well, because once they display the seal, we've actually had charities say, well, I just got a bequest because I had the Humane Seal, or someone give us a fundraiser because we had the Humane Seal. So that's starting to happen, which is really the intent, is to get health charities thinking about the public out there and what they really want. And once, if a charity, you know, dream scenario is that a charity is on the list of charities that do fund animal experiments and start realizing that I'm losing donations because I'm funding animal experiments. And we've actually are talking to a charity on that list that is trying to get the Humane Seal. So that's the ultimate goal, is to move the whole
the research
paradigm,
yeah.
Right, exactly, in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Christy, I'm wondering what other sort of big organizations like the American Heart Association are on that list that people might be surprised about.
It's hard. It's hard for me to know what they'd be surprised about because it's so common to me. But I guess some of the bigger ones, American Cancer Society, March of Dimes, these are all American, though, actually, sorry.
People know about them up here as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So American Cancer Society, March of Dimes.
Right. Let's see, American Heart Association, I mentioned. The Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation, actually, is a big one. They fund about $1.5 million a year of animal experiments. So.
Wow. You know, it's interesting because sometimes I quote like the American Cancer Society or the American Heart Association's figures and their recommendations on, you know, not eating animals and not ingesting cholesterol because, of course, they lead to, or the, in terms of cholesterol, leads to heart disease. And, of course, the hormones in many animals and lead to cancers like prostate and breast cancer. And so it's interesting that on the one hand they're saying, you know, save the animals, but then let's kill the animals to fund the research for the diseases which ingesting these animals cause. So it's a strange kind of circular thing going on there.
Right. It's a little, sometimes it's a little confusing to think about why, you know, there's various reasons why they still fund animal experiments. So most of it is convention.
And money, right?
Right. Well, perhaps. It's just that they have people on a board, that a board of directors, that that's all they know, is this is how you find something out, is you study it in an animal. And so that's what we're trying to change, that idea.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that a lot are moving against animal research and wanting to be on your list? I guess it's kind of like being on, I don't know, the top 100 list, the Vanity Fair list or something. It's cool to be on that list.
That's our ultimate goal, definitely.
It's cool to be
it's cool to have the humane feel, yeah.
Oh, Rob. So you mentioned here the American Cancer Society, March of Dimes, and breast cancer, and I think that probably what's going through some people's minds is like, well, you know, my grandmother died of cancer, or somebody that I know, you know, has breast cancer, or, you know, suffering from diabetes, etc. But looking at this very extensive list, I was going to print out the whole list, and it was taking up like 20, 25 pages. So there's lots of charities, though, that are doing cancer research,
right,
that are doing diabetes research, etc., but aren't using animals. So can you tell us about some of those alternatives, just so people don't have to feel like if they want to give money to cancer that they would necessarily have to give it to one of the larger organizations or one of the organizations that is testing on animals, that there are alternatives. Can you tell us about those?
Sure. I think some of the really heavy hitters as far as funding research, the ones that I like to point out, I guess, birth defect research for children. They're an American charity in Florida, and they have developed, with the help of a board of medical directors, a questionnaire. It's an extremely detailed questionnaire, and what they do is solicit people that have children with a birth defect to fill out this questionnaire. It tests things like exposure to various chemicals, lifestyle choices, even employment history, things like that, and looks at all those variables. And once they start building a database of all this information, you can, in fact, look for specific correlations between a birth defect and an exposure. Mm-hmm. And they've actually become quite an authority on post-wartime birth defects, sort of the children of people coming back from the first war in the Persian Gulf. And they've done a lot with those people and their children. The charity actually did something really interesting. There was a town in Tennessee that was having a high incidence of a specific birth defect, and they had everyone in the town fill out the questionnaire. They went back, analyzed the data, and found it was a specific contaminant in their drinking water in that town, and so were able to stop that exposure and, in fact, prevent any further birth defects. So that's something that I really like to point out as a way that research without animals can really help directly the humans that it's, you know, are being affected.
I think the thing too with charities is there's lots of different critiques of charities just as a movement or something that people can do, but one of them is that, you know, charities tend to fund research that is sort of treating the symptoms rather than looking at the causes, that isn't about prevention. So it's interesting to see that some of these different places actually would be looking at preventative kind of initiatives as well.
Oh, exactly.
I was just seeing here on your list that there's the American Breast Cancer Foundation, and that actually, that's, I guess, a foundation that doesn't test on animals as well. So that's one of the alternatives then for people who
right.
who would like to give money to breast cancer.
Right.
that's called the American Breast Cancer Foundation. There's a huge list. I just want to make sure that people have access to this list and know where to find it. So if you could give us some of your contact information, and I'll ask for it again at the end of the interview. Just want to make sure people know where to find out about the Humane Seal of Approval.
Oh, definitely. The full list of approved charities, as well as a searchable database by keyword and category, is available on the website, and that's www.humaneseal.org. And they can also contact me by email. It's info@humaneseal.org. Or I have a phone number, too, is 202-686-2210, extension 335.
Christy, I was hoping you could give us a sampling of some of the foundations or institutes in Canada that mm-hmm. aren't using animals.
Sure. Like I said, we have about 19 so far that have been approved in Canada. And there's a couple in Toronto. Even the Easter Seal Society has been approved. And they work on services for people with birth defects and developmental disabilities. There's also a couple of home care and kind of handicapped help societies. There's Tobias House Attendant Care is also in Toronto. The Brain Injury Rehabilitation Center, they help people who have had a brain injury regain some of their former cognitive skills, and perhaps someone in a wheelchair help give them the physical work that's required to help them walk again. And they're located in Calgary.
And can you give us the name of that one again?
Oh, sure. It's the Brain Injury Rehabilitation Center.
Okay.
Let's see here. There's also a couple of AIDS HIV charities. There's the AIDS Coalition of Cape Breton.
Breton.
Yeah. I give it a French.
Yeah, you know, I'm probably saying it wrong. You know, I feel at this point my pronunciation is totally gone. I feel like if any of my students are listening, they're taking notes right now. Like, terrible pronunciation. But no, yeah, usually people say Cape Breton.
Cape Breton, okay.
Yeah. So that's the AIDS Coalition of Cape Breton.
Yep.
Okay, great.
And then there's also the HIV Network of Edmonton Society.
Yeah. That's really interesting, too, because I don't know if this is what came to mind for you guys, but when I think about sort of the big foundations that are doing, you know, research on animals, ones that jump to mind right away are cancer research, brain injury research, and AIDS research.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And these are really hot button, I guess, various different afflictions, I don't know what to call them,
right,
that people go through, and that I mean, it's really amazing to see that there's alternatives, but I imagine that you've gotten some people quite irate calling into PCRM or maybe even engaging with you personally about the Humane Seal of Approval, that, you know, at this point, so many people's lives have been touched by these various different diseases and different injuries that happen, and and that sort of, you know, who are you to say that we shouldn't be funding mm-hmm. just anybody and everybody to try to make these things, be a little bit less suffering for people. Have you actually had people call in or try to engage with you that are angry that you're suggesting that you should give money to certain places and not to others?
Occasionally, we do find that. But really the best response to that is research using animals isn't really ever the best avenue, because it's not human-based. There's an extrapolation problem. A lot of treatments that have evolved from animal use turn out not to help or even to harm. And we think that by focusing on animal research, there's even a delay of possible treatments coming to patients that really need them.
Mm.
We also tell people, we're not saying that the charities that fund animal research are bad charities. We're saying that they are just kind of misguided. And for people that really want to focus on the charities that are doing the most direct patient services and human research, this is the way to go.
Our tech, and also sometimes co-host, and wanted to ask you a question. Her name is Lamia.
Okay.
Hi, Christy. I just wanted to know what kind of, follow-up or whatever. So you give these groups a seal of approval, And then years later, they're not doing anything that mm-hmm. they said they were going to do or whatever. So I'm wondering, is there some kind of system that you have, whatever, for checking up on people, making sure they're staying to task?
We don't have any sort of system in place. Basically, if we hear of something, we do sort of watch what they're doing, keep up with them, send them letters from time to time, things like that. But really what would happen is someone would notice. I think eventually someone would say, hey, this charity with the seal is in fact funding an animal experiment, and then would contact us and tell us, and we'd be able to effectively head that off and deal with that.
Yeah, part of it would seem to me about, you know, keeping a finger on the pulse of the various different journals that are getting published as well. So if you have,
right.
you know, an institution that's publishing some sort of animal experimentation, then you'd be able to find out through that way. But, yeah, it's interesting, the question about enforcement, because what assures people that, you know, continuing on. It seems like it's basically sort of based at this point on, I guess, just honesty and hoping that people will mm-hmm. be transparent on their process.
Could I ask another little question,
yeah.
too?
Yeah, sure.
Also, you talking about animal experimentation and stuff like that. So what do you do, like, in regards to researching some of these organizations for other aspects of morality or ethics or whatever, that so they may not do animal experimentation, but they may also not provide good services as an attendant care organization or something like that?
We sort of, in the same way that we would find out if there's been any breaking of the statement of assurance, we keep up on the philanthropy journals. We visit their website from time to time. So if something were to happen, like, say, an approved charity loses its tax-exempt status, we would find out about that through the charity journals that we read, and then they would in fact lose the seal, because you have to be, on the up and up with your financial, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Christy, do you engage in dialogue with some of these organizations about how animal experimentation is detrimental to human health? I'm not quite sure if you approach this like through a clinical-based dialogue with some of these organizations or not.
You mean charities that don't have the seal?
The charities, yeah, that do not have the seal, to say why animal experimentation is bad. Like, for example, I guess you could go through it case by case, but the most recent one, I think, is Vioxx, you know, that passed mm-hmm. animal trials, but of course was taken from the market because of fears of heart disease attack, rather.
Yes, we do, actually. Usually that's member-initiated. If someone contacts me, you know, they received a letter from the American Heart Association telling them why they're funding animal experiments or why they support animal experiments, and I'll respond to that letter with our information. And like I said, I have been talking to an organization on the list of charities that do fund and kind of discussing with them the reasons why they should stop funding, because they really want the humane seal. So,
Christy, I wanted to ask you a question, and I know this is difficult because there's so many different organizations out there, but often on this program we'll say things like animal experimentation, or Rob and I will talk about factory farming, and we don't take a minute to actually describe what that is. I think a lot of people don't know what are the different types of animal experimentation that are currently happening, how widespread it is. Can you give us a sense of some of the experimentation that is happening and why PCRM is opposed to it?
Sure. Well, there are a couple of different types of animal experimentation when you talk about animal experimentation. There's basic research, which is a lot of what the health charities that fund it would be funding. And this is very investigational. It's very kind of, let's take a dog or a rabbit and see what happens when we modify its genes in some way, or see what happens when we give it this drug, for example, or this chemical. The other category, I guess, would be safety testing. So chemicals or drugs that are put up for approval by government organizations would now have to be tested on the animals. And that really involves a series of different identified tests, acute testing, basically giving a large amount of a drug to an animal, many times more than would ever be given to a human, and to see what happens. Mm-hmm. Or a reproductive test where the drug will be fed to pregnant animals.
Mm-hmm. See, all this still sounds pretty clinical. Like, I'm wondering, like,
right.
How many animals are used? Like, for example, there's the LD50 test. Is that still happening, the lethal dose 50?
Yes, it actually is.
Can you describe what that is? Like, to me, this is still astounding that this happens.
The lethal dose 50 is pretty astounding, right? Basically, scientists would take a group of animals, or several groups of animals, and feed each group a different amount of a drug or a chemical. And the LD50 is, in fact, a value of the amount of a chemical at which half of the animals in the group die. So you can imagine a toxic chemical, and it's usually fed to the animals by oral gavage, which is shoving a tube down the rat's throat into the stomach. And then you have this rat has a toxic chemical in its stomach that is so toxic that it dies immediately. So you can imagine that's pretty painful.
I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, too, about the humane or the welfare standards, because surely there are some welfare standards. Are they being adhered to? How good are they? What are they like? I know that you can probably only speak for the American context, but can you tell us more about whether or not they actually do treat the animals humanely? What does this mean, the welfare standards?
In the U.S., there is something called the Animal Welfare Act that, first of all, doesn't apply to rats, mice, or birds used in research, which is kind of astounding since over 95% of animals used in research are rats, mice, and birds.
Hmm.
But to the animals it does apply for, it has various restrictions as far as, you know, you have to have a certain cage size, you can't withhold water from the animal, you have to make sure that, you know, it's kept in a healthy state during the experiment. But, in fact, exceptions can be made if the scientist makes the case that, well, you know, I can't give this animal pain medication because I'm really looking for the response that it gets to a painful stimulus.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like there's lots of loopholes.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's been problems of enforcement as well. I mean, so much of this, the animal experimentation industry, is just incredibly hidden. It's difficult to even obtain some of that information.
It is. It's publicly available, but only if you really get on someone's case and really get after them to try to get that information.
Mm-hmm. So it puts people who are trying to raise awareness about animal experimentation in a difficult position. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why the animal rights movement has relied so heavily on undercover footage of animal experimentation, because it's really difficult to find out exactly what's going on.
Yeah, sometimes that's definitely the case.
But PCRM is, I mean, it's a great organization, and they have a lot of people, you have a lot of people working to find out that information, so it's always good to talk with somebody from PCRM and to know that there's people out there that are trying to find that information out.
I'd like to bring up one more issue just about animals in labs. One of our associates actually just did a review of common laboratory procedures. Things like oral gavage that I just described, something that happens to an animal maybe every day, or blood draw, or even handling of an animal in a laboratory, and looked at the stress responses that were seen. And he basically just did a review of studies that were looking at these stress responses. And it turns out that even handling of a rat or a monkey, or even drawing blood, is so stressful for the animal that their corticosteroids, their other hormones that signify stress, spike unbelievably high. That paper is about to be published, or I believe it may have just been published, but it just shows that even if they're given pain medication for a quote-unquote painful procedure, something as simple as picking them up out of the cage is really distressful for them.
Mm-hmm. It's like the farming industry as well. You know, when we talk about welfare standards that are supposed to, I think, alleviate the concerns of the public, that it's sort of like welfare is so minimally defined. It's like welfare means that you get a drink of water every 24 hours. You know, like it's not even about, you know, these animals are in cages. The lights, you know, are often, you know, off or on for weird times in the day. They don't necessarily getting any stimulation or any social contact with other beings. And so even if the welfare standards are met, the welfare standards themselves are, I think, to be questioned too. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I wanted to point people to the PCR website and also to the Humane Charity Seal of Approval website before we head off. It's www.humaneseal.org. And we didn't get a chance to get into the alternatives of animal testing, but there's a really extensive list of different types of technologies that are being used and have been promoted by PCRM. And you can find information about that, all those different types of technologies, on the humaneseal.org website. And then the larger PCRM website is PCRM, which stands for Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. That's PCRM.org. And that's an organization that's backed by at least 5,000, I believe it's 5,000 physicians as well, something like 11,000 laypersons. And we're going to wrap up because we don't have very much more time left. But I just wanted to say thanks, Christy, for being on the program today.
Thank you for having me. It was great talking to you.
And I hope people check out the websites and find about some good places to give their dough away if they so choose. Thanks, Lamia, Rob, and Stephen, for being here today. You've been listening to Animal Voices, CIUT 89.5.